Chapter 72. Reacher heard a whine like a starter motor, and a cough, and then two huge truck engines burst into life, and the second door started to open. Up close and on foot, it was a different experience. The truck engines were as big and as loud as anything they put on a Mack or a Peterbilt. The doors were huge and thick, like buildings all their own. And up close and on foot, they seemed to move faster. Or maybe that was an illusion. Which would be understandable, because the gap was going to be man-sized a long time before it was vehicle-sized. Everything was relative. 10 more seconds, and the gap would be big enough to step out on stage. The big diesels dug in, and the gap grew 2 feet wide, then 2.5. Reacher raised the Glock. He stepped through the gap. No one there. Reacher was in an empty garage. The space was maybe 40 feet by 40. It had a sad old pickup truck in one corner, gray primer, down at the front on a flat tire. But that was it in terms of vehicle content. The rest was all empty space and oil stains. All the way to the back wall, which was a recent installation in plywood. The side walls and the ceiling were the original concrete. And in fact, the side walls and the ceiling were all more or less the same thing, like a tunnel. Continuing on from the entrance tunnel, 40 feet wide and probably 400 feet long, but now interrupted by the new partition. There were 3 ways out of the garage, not counting the door Reacher had just come in through, which would be a fourth. There was a new door dead ahead in the plywood partition, and there was an original door in each of the sidewalls. In those 2 original spots, the tunnel's vaulted curve was straightened out by a door frame cast so thick and so deep it was almost a tunnel in itself. Reacher pictured the complexity of the lumber formwork, and the anxious DOD engineers inspecting it, and the immense stress it was under until the massive concrete had set. The original door on the right was taped over. It had a sheet of heavy see-through plastic laid over it, fixed at the edges with what looked like a whole roll of duct tape. Purpose unknown. But Reacher's motto was, if in doubt, turn left, so he went the other way, through the other original door in the left-hand side wall. The door itself was a stout old item faced in some kind of faded laminate, probably a real big deal 50 years ago, some kind of a new wonder material. The handle was a plain steel affair, but thick and solid, probably cost $1,000 all on its own. Reacher turned the thick steel handle and pushed the door and stepped into a square room made from 2 old walls and 2 new. Some kind of a crew room. Comfortable chairs, low to the ground. A man in one of the chairs. Not McQueen. He started to get up. He went back down easily enough. Center mass, not a headshot. Safer, more to aim at. Instantaneous brain death not required, not in that situation. The guy's finger was not on a launch button. The crew room had a second door, and Reacher kept the Glock hard on it until he was sure no one was coming to the rescue. Then he moved on, through that second door, into a long, narrow internal hallway that ran away from him to the right, 400 feet or more. He was beginning to see the layout. The building inside was 3 parallel chambers, long and thin, like 3 cigars laid side by side. Corresponding with the 3 entrances, all full of missiles way back when, then empty, just 3 long echoing vaults, now colonized and boxed off with plywood, long central hallways, rooms to the left, rooms to the right, repeated 3 times over, which was ironic. What goes around comes around. The modern DOD had started out exactly the same way. Massive expansion at the start of World War II had left it scrambling. It burrowed into whatever unsuitable old building it could find. The bad news was, there were a lot of new rooms, possibly 40 per chamber, a total of 120, plus or minus. Quantico would arrive before he was halfway through the search, which would be a problem. They would have gotten Del Fuenzo's call well before then. She would have told them to land at Whiteman and head north, locked and loaded and ready to rock and roll. The crossfire was not going to be pretty. And the even worse news was plywood was not a good insulator of sound. which meant the last gunshot had been clearly audible throughout fully one-third of the facility. So Reacher ducked back the way he'd come, through the crew room, past the dead guy in the low-slung chair, and into the garage again. The big mechanized doors were still standing open, like pulled drapes. Beyond them was the 100-foot entrance tunnel, still with the wrecked pickup and the two dead guys in it. Reacher found the inside button and hit it. The starter whined and the big diesels caught and the doors began to close. The noise was deafening. Which was exactly what Reacher wanted. Given a choice, he liked his rear flank protected, and he wanted plenty of audible warning if someone tried to come in after him. Then he walked the depth of the garage space and tried the new door in the plywood end partition. It opened into the same kind of long, narrow central corridor. Rooms to the left, rooms to the right. The center vault colonized just like the first vault. Some of the doors had blue spots on them, plastic circles cut out and glued on. The second room on the left and the second room on the right both had one. That pattern repeated every three rooms as far as the eye could see. Reacher checked behind him. The door he had come through had two blue spots. He listened hard and heard nothing. He took a breath and counted to three and set off walking. To the second door on the right. A cheap store-bought item with a thin chrome handle. And a blue spot at eye level. He turned the thin chrome handle. He pushed open the door. A room of decent size. Empty. No people, no furniture, no nothing. Except what had been there all along, which was another original door through the side wall. It was identical to the first two he had seen, with the complex cast frame like a tunnel all its own, and the pale old laminate facing, and the heavy steel handle. Clearly, the blue spot meant a way through, side to side. A shortcut, from chamber to chamber. For busy people. The garage door got two blue spots, because it had ways through both left and right. The lateral access was an efficiency measure. Both now, apparently, and certainly back when missiles roamed the Earth. It would have been time-consuming for a technician to walk the whole length of the building and go outside and then come back in down a different tunnel. Far better to facilitate a little crosstown traffic, maybe every 60 feet or so. Some guy with a clipboard would have figured that out long ago. The architects would have gotten to work with drafting tables and sharpened pencils and load factors calculated with slide rules and guesswork. Reacher was in a room on the right-hand side of the row. And just like the door he had seen on the right in the garage, this door on the right was also covered over with thick see-through plastic, which was also stuck down very carefully at the edges with duct tape. Lots of it. Purpose unknown. He had two motel keys in his pocket, one from the fat man's place in Iowa and one from the FBI's quarantine spot in Kansas. The fat man's key was sharper. The tang at the end had been left pretty rough by the key-cutting process. Maybe the key was a replacement. Maybe some guest had headed home with the original still in his pocket, and maybe the fat man's policy was to use the cheapest services he could find. Reacher pressed the see-through plastic against the faded old laminate behind it, and he scratched at it with the tip of the key. The key snagged and jumped and made pulls and blisters. The blisters went thin and puffy, and the second go-round with the key started a hole in one of them. Reacher got the tip of the key in the hole and sawed away at it, cutting where he could, stretching and tearing where he couldn't. When the slit reached 3 inches long, he put the key back in his pocket and hooked his fingers in the slit, palms out, and forced his hands apart. The plastic was tough, some kind of heavy grade, not like the tissue-thin stuff he'd seen painters use as drop cloths, more like shrink wrap. He'd seen people struggling with it. The supermarket should sell switchblades right next to the salami. He got the slit about 12 inches long, and the tension went out of it. He had to start a new cut with the key. He learned from that experience. He changed his technique to a rhythmic cut-yank sequence, with the key in his mouth between cuts. Eventually he got it done, more or less all the way from top to bottom. Very stretched and ragged, but big enough to force himself through. He put his arm through the hole and turned the heavy steel handle and pushed the door with his fingertips. Nothing but darkness beyond. And cold air. And a silent acoustic suggestive of vast space and hard walls. He turned sideways and forced himself through the slit in the plastic, leaning with the Glock, then his right foot, then his right shoulder, ducking his head, pulling his left arm and his left foot after him. He used touch and feel, tracing the shape of the cast frame around the door, closing the door behind him, searching for a light switch. He knew there would be one. Those old-time architects with their drafting tables and their sharpened pencils would have been plenty thorough. The electrical plans would have been a whole separate sheaf of blueprints. He found an electric conduit on the wall, steel pipe, thickly painted, cold to the touch, covered in dust. He traced it back to a square metal box, maybe 4 inches by 4, with a dimple on its front face and a cold brass toggle in the dimple. He turned the lights on.